What's up, everyone? You heard it. You saw it. You witnessed it. King James is now a champion in Cleveland. Cleveland Cavaliers win their first NBA championship, the first major championship in the city of Cleveland in 52 years since the great Jim Brown. Hello, everyone. This is the Pod Show. I am your host, OJ Spivey, sports, entertainment, history, culture, right here on The Pod Show. Follow us on Twitter at The Pod Show. Follow me at OJ Philly. We also have a Facebook fan page also. Follow us at The Pod on Facebook. We're also on Instagram as well. And also have a blog on the Tumblr account. You just go to The Pod Show. /tumblr.com. So we'll be here for the next hour or so talking sports with you. And again, always enjoy your feedback. Get back at me on Twitter with the two Twitter handles that I just gave you. Folks, we said it could not be done. Many of you who probably listened to this podcast, who are about to listen to this podcast, thought it couldn't be done. All of the critics, all of the detractors can now say LeBron James got it done and also got it done in dramatic fashion. Game 7 against the Golden State Warriors. Again, we really don't have to backtrack it, go to the details, but he is now a champion. I think some people are still getting the gist of LeBron James finally getting it done in Cleveland after three tries, of course, last year with a depleted Cavaliers team against the Golden State Warriors, and then back in 2007, which seems like ages ago when it was just he and God knows who else as far as the Cavaliers are concerned, getting swept by the San Antonio Spurs. And, of course, let's not forget, this is now three championships for LeBron James. He got it done twice back-to-back with the Miami Heat. Of course, left the Miami Heat to go to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And what a game. What a game. What a series. And even me included, I will admit that once the Cavaliers went down 2-0, I thought, okay, maybe it might be a bad matchup for the LeBron and the Cavaliers, even with Kyrie Irving, even with Kevin Love. But when they went down 3-1, you kind of got the sense that maybe Cleveland could make this more of a series. I kind of knew that they would win Game 5, especially with Draymond Green suspended. Not that he was the end-all, be-all of Golden State winning that night. But when you go back to, and I'm going to get on the Warriors a little bit, even though they had a fantastic season, terrific season, one of the greatest seasons in NBA history. They didn't get it done, but it's still a great series. I'll talk about them in a moment. But I do want to say, getting back to the Cavaliers, the Warriors, I thought they got very comfortable after Game 4. They surprised a lot of people by taking hold of Game 4 when they beat the Cavaliers in Cleveland. And it seems like they believed that, okay, they were just going to come back home to Oakland and just take the series. They could have clinched that night, Game 5. It didn't happen. Cleveland came to play. And after that, they never looked back. I mean, even if you want to use the excuse with the Golden State Warriors not having Draymond Green that night in Game 5, they still had Game 6. They still had Game 7. And that's a testament to LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, all those guys. They got it done. Again, spectacular for James. You throw Kyrie Irving in there also, that 41-point game that he had. And look, Cavaliers, they made the adjustments. And with Kyrie Irving, he took Steph Curry to school. As great as Steph Curry is, he's a fun player to watch, lots of fun to watch, especially with his shooting. But I'm get to Curry in a second. But Kyrie Irving, he took Steph Curry to school, and that can't be understated. There was a lot of complaining on the Warriors' part. There's a lot of complaining by fans. I saw it up and down Twitter alike, and people were saying, okay, well, the NBA is rigged. I'm going to get into that also because I think that is just the most silliest thing that I've ever heard. Okay, I'll admit, if anything is rigged, anything that I kind of looked at to even suspect that it might be rigged, it's probably the NBA lottery, but not the games themselves. But you hear all kind of ridiculous rumors that, okay, the refs on the take, the well, they did have one ref that was on the take, but that was just one. But the NBA is on the take and how they want the Cleveland Cavaliers to win. They want LeBron to win. It's a conspiracy, all that mess. But all that to diminish what LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers did. It's a bunch of nonsense. It's quite silly for that matter. In fact, I had to keep from laughing from some of the stuff that I've read and some of the stuff that was presented to me. So I'm laughing as taping this podcast right now. But I'm going to break down the NBA Finals and put it in its proper historical place. I thought it was a great series overall. So I don't know about you, but put it this way. After the Cavaliers forced a Game 6, and then forced a Game 7 for that matter, how could you not root for those guys? It seemed to be split 50-50. I always try to take a unofficial survey via Twitter as far as, you know, what are people thinking, what are fans thinking, what are analysts thinking. It seemed to be quite down the middle. And, you know, that's fine because when you look at the stats, Golden State was still highly favored to win Game 7. They were 4.5, in fact, 5-point favorites when I looked at it before the game started. Everything was in the Warriors' favor. Of course, being down 3-1, no team has ever come back from a 3-1 deficit in the NBA Finals to win it all. And that makes it all the more remarkable that LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Golden State, came back to beat the Golden State Warriors. You can break it down however you want. You can look at it from the Cleveland side. You can look at it from the Golden State Warriors side. I'll try to split it down the middle as far as how to look at those things. So, again, of course, if you're listening to me live, you can get at me. If you're listening on the website, the Blog Talk Radio website is where I broadcast from. So you can always get at me live. However, we're going to break it down for you, break down the NBA Finals and more. Also, too, NBA Draft is coming up. As we're recording this, the NBA Draft is going to happen tomorrow. And Sixers, worst-kept secret, my Philadelphia 76ers are going to take Ben Simmons, as they should. I'll talk about that as well, despite a lot of media guys here in Philadelphia stating that they'll give you probably 101 reasons, I'm sorry, probably 101 reasons why not to take Ben Simmons, which I think another thing is silly. Between the conspiracy of the Cleveland Cavaliers winning the NBA Finals and the Sixers somehow not taking Ben Simmons, I can't think of two more sillier things in sports right now. So, and it just happens to be basketball. So, anyway, back to the finals. When you put this NBA Finals into historical perspective, 2016 NBA Finals, it goes back. The signature play, of course, is the block, Lee Block, however you look at it. LeBron James blocking Andre Iguodala. It seems like he came from Akron, Ohio, all the way to Oakland to block that shot of Andre Iguodala, the layup. Not only did he block it, he pinned it. Again, you all saw it. But that was so monumental, and it was perfect timing. Not only was it just such a great play, it was great timing, it was perfect timing. Both teams were struggling to make a shot in the last 5 minutes of the game. That's another thing that you could talk about with the Warriors, too. But as both teams were struggling, Golden State had a fast break going. you saw Iguodala with the well, Steph Curry had the ball, actually. He was pushing the ball. He actually made a great bounce pass to Iguodala for the layup. But LeBron James, being the fantastic athlete that he is, came out of nowhere to block the shot, and that was just incredible. And you kind of knew right there, well, you kind of got the sense right there after LeBron blocked that shot. It was like, okay, he told the Warriors, you're not going to win this. This is our championship. You're not going to win. And it's kind of what you got. It's kind of the vibe that you got when LeBron blocked that shot. And, of course, thanks to Kyrie, who ended up shooting the game winner, the game-winning three over Steph Curry. Steph Curry seems to be the operative word here, operative name here, not to jump on him again, because he's a fantastic player, deserving of back-to-back MVPs. But they went against LeBron. LeBron was determined. Kyrie Irving was determined. And let's talk about Kevin Love. For someone who was just a martyr, someone who was just a mercenary throughout the series, anywhere from Kevin Love is hurting the team, people were saying that, okay, they should have kept Andrew Wiggins and not traded for Love, all those things. Love had a great game under Game 7. And not even the scoring, just getting the rebounds, playing defense. He actually D'd up Steph Curry on a play to where he made him shoot off one hand, one leg, I should say. That says a lot about Kevin Love. I mean, you wouldn't think that Kevin Love would be in the same gym with a Steph Curry, but during Game 7, he did that, especially in crunch time. So it's a total team effort. As streaky as those guys were, as streaky as the Cleveland Cavaliers were, their role players, J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, at times you wouldn't think those guys could throw the ball in the ocean. Those guys really stepped up. But it goes back to LeBron James. It goes back to Kyrie Irving. And they just really, really brought it home for Cleveland. And if you saw the parade happened today. Cleveland is a small town compared to, you know, New York, L.A., Chicago, even Philadelphia. But it was just a great time for that parade and great for the city of Cleveland. It was also awesome to see the great Jim Brown. You see that torch being passed from Jim Brown to LeBron James as Jim Brown presented the NBA trophy, the NBA championship trophy to LeBron James. That was quite a great moment. So we'll talk about more about the NBA Finals. We'll get into the NBA draft as well. This is the Pod Show. We actually have a caller on the line. I'm hoping that they want to talk to us here. So let's go. It's from Philadelphia. So we're going to get them on the line and have them speak with us today. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, hi, how are you? Welcome to the Pod Show.
Harold from Logan.
Hey, what's up, Harold?
How
you
doing?
Are you, man? Thanks for
finding
the show. Good to talk to you.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
So people who don't know, Harold is one of my good friends. We go way back. We used to work together, and then when I spent time at WURD here in Philadelphia, he was often one of our favorite callers, called us frequently. Talked a lot of basketball, football as well. So, Harold, I'm glad to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me, man. So, what are your thoughts? Because initially, we talked on Facebook, I know. And I know you were impressed, and you're not easily impressed being a basketball aficionado. You're a bit of an historian, too, and you're not quick to give praise. But you gave it up for LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. We talked about the block, Lee Block, however you want to call it. But give me your thoughts on the series. Break it down for me from start to finish, if you can, whatever your thoughts are.
Well, first of all, I'd like to officially give LeBron James an apology before I say anything.
Oh.
Because I was one of his, you know, his harshest critics. You know, I was on him a lot,
sure.
You know, the series going down 3-1, and I thought that he was taking the facilitator role too far. You know, whenever,
yeah.
you know,
to
you
a
look
fault.
At the great
yeah.
players, it was like, okay, you saw Bird or Magic or Jordan, well, maybe not Magic so much, but Jordan, Kobe, those type players, they never went down. When they went down fighting. And I
they went
looked
down
at
fire,
it like,
shooting, yeah.
Yeah. And I looked at when the series was 3-1, I was saying, you know what? LeBron, yeah, I know he's the unselfish superstar, but sometimes you got to take the game by the throat and put your stamp
yes.
on it. And so, you know, that series after the first two games, you know, the Warriors, you know, did what they do. You miss a couple of shots, they knock down three threes, and then you're down 13, you know,
absolutely.
Just like that. And now you miss a couple of more shots, down, you're down 20. So it's, that's the way the series was going. And I felt like LeBron, you know, he's hitting the open guy and he's doing what LeBron does. But I said, you know what? If they're going to win this series, LeBron is going to have to do what all the great players do. And the back-to-back 40-point games showed that he had that. So
yes.
when he did that, I said, oh, okay. All right, this is what I wanted to see. This is what I wanted to see from LeBron. And, you know, when that series, when they won that game in Golden State, I said, oh, boy, because you saw what, and I said, if this somehow goes to seven games, I said, I don't want to go, if I'm the Warriors, I don't want to go against LeBron in a seventh game.
Even though it was on their home turf.
Winner take all, even though it was on their home turf, I said, a winner take all, I don't want to go against LeBron. And
well, Harold,
and
you must have realized when it went to a game seven, you must have had in your back of your mind, I'm assuming, you had in your back of your mind that LeBron James actually plays his best ball in game sevens. He hasn't had a lot of game sevens, but I think the two or three that he played in, he played extremely well.
And his elimination game record
in terms of his performance, phenomenal.
Yeah,
right.
is phenomenal. So in watching that game, I mean, it was close, and I said, you know what, Golden State just can't pull away. They couldn't pull away. They would get up by nine or something, and the Cavs would bring it right back down. So, oh, man, and then it got down to, you know, under a minute. And that play – see, I thought it may be the greatest defensive play. It may be the greatest play, period, the block on it.
But you've already given it the greatest defensive play, at least that you've ever seen.
Yeah, it's the great. Yeah, it's, but
finals.
It may be the greatest play, period. I mean,
all right, now
LeBron,
let me stop you here. I'm going to let you finish. I'm just going to put this in perspective before we go further. Now, we've seen a lot of great plays in NBA Finals games. We've seen a lot of great shots. We've seen a lot of great performances. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Harold. So we go back to – and it's still fresh in my mind, even though it's almost 20 years ago.
I think I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Game six. Yes, you know where I'm going. We're here. game six, NBA Finals, 1998. Okay, and you know LeBron will be forever compared to Michael Jordan, fair or unfair, wise or unwise.
Right,
the push that was a call, or this should not have been called. You know, people still can debate with that in the barbershop. So,
right.
Michael Jordan, the shot, and the form that we saw after he made the shot against Byron Russell in – the NBA Finals, Game 6 against the Utah Jazz, that lasting impression. And you know what? I have one big criticism on Michael Jordan. I mean, and this is not even, you know, what you can criticize him for off the court. I have one criticism of Jordan off the court. I wish that was his lasting image. I wish he never went back to basketball, going to the Wizards and everything like that.
Right.
And it was so funny during that shot because I remember Bob Costas. When he was doing the NBA for NBC at that time. He set it up perfectly. After he made that shot to put the Bulls in the lead for the sixth championship, third in a row, he said, that could be the last shot Michael Jordan ever takes the NBA, and I thought that was perfect. And he just could not leave it alone. But anyway.
So we know that shot. And many people believe that that might be the greatest play or the greatest shot in NBA history, NBA Finals history. You could probably, you know, pick a few of Jordan's because he has six championships. But do you put LeBron's block up there with Jordan's shot?
I have to say, because of the stage, Game 7 of the NBA championship, and it kind of just, it was like what LeBron is all about. Like, we know that scoring is the glamour.
Complete player.
You know, we know we know Jordan can score 30, Kobe can score 30, LeBron. But how many of the superstars could have done that right there? And it was like the thing that separates him. Now, like I said, all the stars can score. You know, that's most of the time that's what makes them stars. But how many could have made that play? Like, LeBron could have made that shot that Jordan made. But I don't think, as great as Jordan was, he could have made that play.
That particular
you know
play.
What I'm saying? That particular play. I think only that's LeBron
fair.
Makes that play.
So well, and that's it's so why funny, Harold, because I've never heard, I haven't heard anybody, you're the first to say that. I mean, and it takes a lot of guts to say that because, okay, well, yeah, Jordan could have done this, Jordan could have done that. In fact, Jordan is so great to where a lot of times it becomes mythical. So, I mean, I heard people say this week that, okay, well, Jordan never had to play in the Game 7. I'm like, well, okay, all right, that's fine. But he never swept the finals either. So, there you
go. Right.
And most of his finals were Game 6s. I think only one of his six championships went to five games or less. He never had
the Lakers.
And
I think
it was just five games. The Lakers. And that was the old Lakers team, you know, by comparison. So, but anyway, I think you put it in a great perspective, and I kind of knew that you would. You talked about the magnitude, the stage, and that part of the game. As I was saying before you came on, I mean, both teams were really struggling last 5-6 minutes of the game. They were really struggling to make a shot because
you
saw a couple bad shots. You just saw some misses, and I mean, the Warriors. I mean, look, they couldn't throw the ball in the ocean for the last 4 minutes. And I'm going to get to them in a sec, but your perspective on LeBron James' block, some people are saying, okay, maybe it's a little overblown. I don't think so, and you just diminished that. It should not be diminished at all given the stage and the time. It was perfect timing.
Exactly. So where he came from, and you said it great, from Akron. He came from Akron to make that block.
And it was almost like it was a statement block too, and we saw the couple blocks that he had on Curry earlier in the series, which are funny too.
Right.
And in fact, the one he actually did it a number of times, but the one where Curry staked one way and then staked the other way, tried to stake the other way to get James, he still blocked it, which was hilarious. And then, you know, that's when the trash talk started. I was going to say, maybe that might have been when the series turned. I don't know, but I want to get your take on when you talked about how LeBron James, you know, something clicked to where, okay, he's going to take this series over, like you mentioned. Do you think that was a turning point, or do you look at a play? Do you look at a game to where the series turned? And put your analytical hat on. Where do you think the series turned into the Cavs' favor?
I think. You know how sports stars say, well, you know what, I don't read the papers. I don't look at sports shows, and I don't do – I watch sports shows all the time. And when they were down 3-1, everywhere I turned, everything I turned on, everybody was saying the same thing. Like, LeBron is going to have to show – that he's the man. Like, everybody said the same thing. Like, look, LeBron, I know you want to pass the ball. I know you want to be a facilitator, but you have to take the game by the throat. Every channel I turn to, every sports center, Stephen, whoever, Jordan, it's on you. I'm sorry, LeBron, it's on you. And I think he heard that. I think he heard that, and I think that something inside of him, not that he needed, you should need extra motivation, but I think it sunk in. And like I said, those back-to-back 40-point games showed that something got into him, you know, whereas though he was still kind of, you know, able to facilitate a little, but his aggressiveness and just the desire to win the game. So I think that all the talk got to him. Maybe he got a phone call. Who knows? But it was like something clicked, you know, and I think it was before the game was played. I don't think it was a play in the game, but it was, he said to himself, you know what, it's on me. You know, it's on me. You know, I'm the king, the chosen one. You know, all of that, you know. So let me go out there and perform. So that's how I look at it, Jay. I mean,
wow.
Like I said, something got to him. A word from somebody, whether it was he watched all the shows, something got to him. And he stepped up. And he's greatly earned my respect. He I always look at him a certain way, you know, as a great player, superstar. But he now has, I have nothing. You will never, ever see another post from me. Nothing negative towards LeBron James.
Well, he highly impressed you during the series,
yes.
Especially the last three games.
Yes.
All right. So we're talking with my good buddy Harold. We go way back, basketball aficionado. In fact, he knows just as much as basketball as anybody I would put up here, at least here in this city and beyond. So we're talking NBA Finals. This is the Pie Show. My name is OJ Spivey. And if you want to chime in too, you listen to us live, give us a call at 646-787-8455. And Harold, let me shift gears a little bit to where, let's go to the other side. Well, before we do that, let's break down one of the other players on the Cavaliers, and that's Mr. Kyrie Irving. Now, he had something seemed to click with him also
in the last few
games or so. Well, I mean, we can't throw game three out because, you know, the Cavs did a lot to stay in the series to cut it to 2-1. It went down 3-1, but game three can't be pushed to the side either. But I'm going to backtrack with Kyrie Irving, going back to the Toronto series, getting schooled by Kyle Lowry, Atlanta series, you know, getting schooled a little bit by Jeff Teague, and, you know, even before that. But Kyrie Irving was not known as a defensive player. His defense still lacks a little bit, however, but something clicked with him, being more aggressive, being more attentive, knowing that he could score. I mean, somebody must have gave him a phone call, too, saying he could score, and not only that, that he could take Curry on every play. Now, where the series shifted, what I saw, Cleveland Cavaliers made excellent adjustments, especially when they knew that Bogut would be injured. That caused them to go to the basket a lot more. Something clicked with Kyrie Irving. I don't know if it was the switching on defense, which a lot of experts have talked about. He was able to just wipe the floor with Curry the last few games and get whatever matchup he wanted. LeBron, too, as you mentioned. Those two guys were able to get whatever matchup they wanted on the switch. They welcomed the switch, and Golden State never adjusted to it. So talk a little bit about Kyrie Irving. I know he kind of had that in him because he has that old-school game, you know, Uncle Drew. He has that old-school playground game where if you isolate him, he can take guys off the dribble. But he took it to a next level too.
Yes, he did. Now, with Kyrie, you know, I've kind of watched his progression, you know, since he's been in the league. We all knew from Jump Street he was a birthday player. You know, he could dribble, he could cut you up, cross you over, take you to the hole. But as, you know, as he's been in the league a couple of years, he's kind of seen his jump shot become very, very lethal at times. You know, he's been a little inconsistent, you know, here and there. But his game, and it looks like he had in this series the full support of LeBron James. It's like, you know, I remember one day he took, you know, 28 shots, you know, but it was like, it was cool. We know, we see what you can do. Now, he wasn't hitting the shots at first, but you saw the talent level, and you saw, and it was kind of like, you keep doing what you're doing. Nobody can guard you. One-on-one, nobody can guard you. You keep doing what you're doing, it's going to fall. It's kind of like he had the blessings of the coach and LeBron to do what he does. And I think when you have that confidence from your team, because trust me, if he was doing that kind of like on his, there would have been some rumblings, like Kyrie shooting too much. You know, when they were down, you would have heard a whole lot.
Yeah, and he's even criticized for dribbling too much.
Yeah, and you know, and I say that about him a lot. You know, because I watch Kyrie dribble, he'll cross you over and have you where he got you, and then come back to you dribbling. So I'm like, you know, Kyrie, you know, like, but. Man, he, you know, what game was that? Obviously, the game seven, but where he scored 40. That was game five.
Yes.
And that's when I was like, wow, like, nobody can guard this dude. And it's all about
him hitting the shots.
You know, it's all about him hitting. It's really nobody stopping him in the previous game. It was just he wasn't dropping the shots. But, you know, as the series went on, those shots started falling. And his confidence, he seems to be one of those type guys, you know, when those couple of shots fall, you're in trouble. And so, you know, come game seven, it was like.
Yeah, and we saw that in game seven because they got Kyrie Irving going early. And we saw that in game seven. And, I think that's a good point, talking about his confidence, getting him going early, getting him to, you know, take a few shots, get that rhythm going. And he seems to be one of those classic rhythm players.
Exactly.
Not streaky, but rhythm. Because streaky and rhythm, and it's two different things. Now, speaking of rhythm, going to the other side, his nemesis, and a lot of, and really pretty much kind of LeBron's nemesis, too, because when you talk about the whole MVP, you know, voting and all of that, two-time MVP, Steph Curry, back-to-back, deservedly so. But we saw something with Steph Curry. I'll tell you a couple of things that I saw in this finals and as the series shifted. You were absolutely right, Harold, saying that Cavaliers saw something. I don't know if it was filmed. LeBron actually talked about watching some film and making the adjustments after being down 3-1. That's a testament to his greatness as well, because the great ones, they study film, they see what they could take advantage of, they're relentless in that, and then they execute it. The biggest thing is just executing it on the court or on the field. As far as Steph Curry is concerned, I think the Warriors got a little bit spoiled during the playoffs, and I think they got a little bit overconfident, too, after they went up 3-1. And as far as Steph individually, he didn't have a great series to begin with. He had a couple 30-point games, I believe, but he was pretty streaky. And I think one of the biggest things that happened with Steph Curry is the Cavaliers became physical with him. The refs let that go. We can talk a little bit about the officiating because it was very highly criticized. And I stay on Twitter a lot more than Facebook. And, I mean, look, there were all kind of conspiracy theories that I read. I mean, it almost got personal.
Ridiculous.
Exactly. So, but nonetheless, the refs allowed them to play, which is pretty commonplace in NBA Finals. But when Steph was not used to coming off the screens, when he was not used to breaking free like he usually does, a little bit of Klay Thompson too. They got physical with him, and also, too, they made him work defensively to where I think they kind of wore him down physically and then ended up wearing him down mentally to where we saw that breakdown in game six. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was very surprised the way the series went in terms of Curry's play after seeing the way the regular season went, in going into the playoffs, I just a certain level of play from Curry. And it was like, you know, in the finals, I saw that he was bothered. You know, you watch games and, you know, the Warriors, for the most part, they went 73-9. And most of those 73 wins were blowouts. You know, they blew people out. Now, okay, it's finals. Now there's a little bit of, you know, jersey grabbing and, you know, stuff like that, a little bump here,
yeah, and
elbow here.
I saw that
here.
On both sides, by the way. Yeah.
Right, right. But this is the NBA Finals. This is basketball. This is what we're used to, Jay, what we talk about. This is real basketball. You know,
yeah, well, we grew up
gonna,
with it, yep.
Yeah, if you're going to play the game, stuff like that is going to go both ways. That's just the way it is, you know. But it seemed to me that Curry just was – he was bothered, you know. And then the games, you know, that warrant blowouts where they're going back and forth. You know, he's not really used to that, well, at least not this season, you know. And maybe – because when you look at Curry play, he's a very, even though he's like, you know, the golden boy, he's like a cocky kind of, you know, with the dribbling once a three falls and then he's shaking and baking. And, you know, he couldn't do that because he was bothered so much, you know, by the defense. And the Cavaliers did an outstanding job guarding Clay and Curry, because even in those two wins in Golden State, I thought they did a great job for the most part covering, but it was the other guys who did it, you know.
Right.
So later on in the series, you know, I watched Curry, and I like to watch what's kind of going on in the trenches and to see what's going on and why this player is performing up, you know, performing up to par. And the Cavs did an excellent job. Sure, I saw a little, you know, maybe a trip here, this jersey, you know, being stretched a little, but I'm all for that. That's basketball, you know. So I just think that as the series went on, they went up 3-1, and like you said, they got a little, okay, it's over. You know, we got this. You know, who's going to come back from 3-1 on the Warriors? You know, who's going to do that? Because there's going to be at least one game where they completely shoot the lights out and you have no chance. That's how I was looking at it. You know, it's like, okay,
right,
you're going to hold them down. But, you know, like I said, the Cavs, you know, they kept the games close. You didn't allow the Splash Brothers to really get that flow when they're, you know, they're up and now they're really jacking trays and they're falling. Now they're up by 20. They didn't let the Warriors get away from them to get in their comfort zone, because their comfort zone is blowing you out the gym. You know, it's not these tight, you know, down to the wire games all the time. That's not really their comfort zone. So LeBron is more built for that, you know. And so the Cavs were able to create that type atmosphere in those games. And I just think that Curry, you know, a superb season, and yeah, he deserved the MVP and all of that. But man, in these clutch tight games, I just think that his style of play, like, it wasn't geared for that, you know, where, you know, sometimes you got to go to the basket, you know, you got to create, you got to, you know, take a foul, try to get a hand one, you got to do other things. And he just didn't live up to the billing.
Yeah. And it seemed like he relied too much on his three. He didn't go to the basket as much as I'm sure Warriors fans would have liked to seen him do when his shot wasn't falling. He just seemed to move
right,
with that.
Right.
Klay Thompson, too, even though I thought Klay had a much better series overall. And as far as the coaching is concerned, when you look at the two coaches, of course, Steve Kerr won as a rookie head coach last year. Tyronn Lue taking over midseason over David Blatt. I mean, you talk about the Cavaliers overall. I mean, you could actually pick out every player on the roster, including LeBron James. You can also pick out Tyronn Lue. I mean, look, after game two, he can't coach. They can't play. They're overmatched. It's just a bad matchup. How do you look at Tyronn Lue? We all knew him. You know, his before that, his claim to fame was
Allen Iverson stepping over him in, you know,
right,
2001
right.
finals. But when you take the time to look at it, Tyronn Lue, he's kind of built to be a head coach because he was, first of all, he's a point guard by trade.
He's a point guard, right.
And, you know, all good point guards, well, you don't even have to be a good point guard. You stay in the league for a little while, you're going to learn how to coach. And a lot of former point guards end up coaching. So, and he's along that he's along that coaching tree of point guards who we see time and time again. But how do you put Tyronn Lue in perspective as far as coaching this game? Because everybody's okay, LeBron James runs the team. You know, you could make a good case for that. But how? And I think for sure he outcoached Steve Kerr in Game 7, but. Do you think he was just as big a part of the adjustments as LeBron was, as Kyrie was?
I think so. I think when you have, I mean, there's only a few players in this league who you can say, and not to diminish the coach, where it's like, okay, this guy is like the player and the coach of the team. Where you would even say that. LeBron is that type of player where people will say that. So for the coach, the first thing he has to do is he has to obviously make his presence known, but at the same time, respect that you do have a guy who has the knowledge of the game. And I think LeBron's IQ is very high. And you're not always going to have that type of player on your team. So I think that him and LeBron kind of merged, you know, and I think that, you know, at one point they said in the season that, you know, he called LeBron, I think, into his office and he, you know, told him this and that and told him, you know, pretty much, you know, he got a little exaggerated, like he kind of chewed him out.
I don't know
if you heard that during the season. But I think in these playoffs, I think, you know, the adjustments, I think once they were down, and like I said, with LeBron, you know, I said something clicked. But at the same time, I think they both kind of, you know, buckled down. And I think Tyronn Lue, you know, just made the adjustments. He's a young coach, you know, and he took over a team, you know, when David Black was like 30-11. And, you know, when he first got there, you know, the Cavs, you know, they were struggling a little bit. But I think he found his way during the season. And like I said,
and kind of clashed with Kyrie Irving, too. There were some rumors about that. So, yes.
But, you know, as the season went on, I think he's a relatable type guy. That's what it appears. You know, that's my impression of him. I think he's the type of guy who can kind of be firm. But at the same time, he can say, look, man, I'm, you know, you're my guy. You know what I mean? And, you know, it may be some falling out, stuff like that. But I think he was able to relate to his players as the season went on. And in these finals, you know, when they were down 3-1, the whole to everybody, you know, they were talking about Love, LeBron, and, you know, Tyronn Lue. But I think he got it together. And I think he made the right adjustments and, you know, coaching, you know, like I said, coaching with a player like LeBron, you know, maybe not be the easiest thing in the world, you know. But
oh,
like
certainly
I said,
not
I
easy,
think,
yeah. And I'm sure it wasn't easy coaching Michael Jordan. And you had to have a special guy like Phil Jackson who understood people.
Right. But I think that he, like I said, I think him and LeBron merged perfectly. You know, they merged perfectly. And, you know, as the series went on, you have to give some credit to the coach. I know, you know, LeBron, you know, I sat here, you know, tonight saying that, you know, LeBron the 40-point games and all of that. But I do definitely give a whole lot of coaching credit to, you know, Tyronn Lue, definitely. So, you know, I think as time goes on, you know, I'm curious to see what the future holds for them. If they can keep it together. Kyrie now has more confidence and, you know, see where they go from there.
Well, yeah, well, that leads me into the next question, Harold. I'm speaking with my buddy Harold. This is the Pod Show. My name is OJ Spivey. I'm your host. We're talking NBA Finals here on this podcast. Well, Harold, that kind of leads me into my next question.
as far as the Cavs in the future, and as the NBA draft is tomorrow, you know, there's a big trade today with Derrick Rose going to the Knicks,
right,
and then
right.
a couple other deals on the table, mm-hmm. which may or may not happen. We'll talk about that in a minute, too. But as far as the Cavs are concerned, I mean, I looked up today. It's hard to realize. It seems like Kyrie Irving has been in the league for quite some time now, but he's only 24 years old. I think Kevin Love is only 27. Mm-hmm. LeBron is 31, but it seems like that's still a young 31. It doesn't look to me like anybody's going to be a true threat for the Cavs, at least for the next year or two. But going to Kevin Love specifically, again, another guy who was highly criticized. People thought that he shouldn't even play the rest of the finals after he got a concussion. Kevin Love, I thought, played huge, as I mentioned earlier in the show. I thought he played huge defensively, and if not anything else, just on the board, just his presence
right.
himself.
Right.
And I think that
right.
was part of Golden State's detriment, too, because they didn't have that low post presence to where they could force the Cavaliers to change what they do defensively, what they do
right.
offensively. I know Bogut was a presence early in the series.
Huge
kept
presence.
The Cavs out
yeah.
of the lane a little bit, yeah. But I would have thought that as far as the low post, as good as we say Draymond Green is, I thought he would be with his size, I thought he would be a better low post player. But going back to Love real quick, do you still see Kevin Love with this team? Do you still think the Cavs can grow with the big three? And do you think they'll just only get better and they'll get closer?
I'm not one of the people who think that, you know, Kevin Love should be ran out of town. You know, I watched the games and, you know, in bed and I looked at all the, you know, the posts and all that, and everybody seems to, you know, the consensus is that, you know, he's a bum and he shouldn't have played and all that. I think what he brings to the team, you know, obviously, you know what you have in Kyrie and LeBron. But Love, I still love his ability to stretch the floor at times. I don't want him to be exclusively there because I love his work down low. That's where he made his, you know.
And
that
certainly worked
you
for
know.
Them early in the playoffs against Atlanta, against Toronto. That
right.
certainly worked
right.
for them. Golden State, they knew they had to do something different because Golden State is hell. They were, you know, defending champions, and they didn't get there
right.
just by default.
Right, right. And, I mean, the fact that, you know, we all remember the 28-point, 20 rebound games he had, seemed like every night seemed like at times with the, you know, the Timberwolves.
Minnesota, yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, and he, you know, he would step out sometimes and drill the tray, you know, but I like that big three. I really do. I think the fact that, you know, obviously with a player like LeBron, you need space. You need to create space on the floor because if, you know, with Tristan, even though he's not a low post player, but, you know, with Love, I like seeing him playing the dual role. You know, I want to see him on the outside. Sometimes I want to see him inside. But you have to give LeBron somebody to kick the ball to consistently. And, you know, JR, I know JR is a guy who, you know, he's a streaky guy. If he hits one, you know, you're like, oh, watch out, because, you know, he's going to launch two more, you know, in the next two trips, you know. So, but you have to have a consistent guy on the outside. And I think that what he adds board-wise and then his ability to stretch the floor is a vital component to that team. You know, because you obviously know Kyrie can break it and get to the hole. He needs his space. And with LeBron, like I said, he needs his space. So if you got that third guy, you know, all-star type player, you know, who can hit the tray, but then you may need him depending on, you know, if Tristan goes out, man, you want Kevin down low. You know, the East doesn't have any, you know, real, you know, volume of centers to my knowledge. So you can put a Kevin Love, you know, you can put him, he can be a real valuable player to that team. So I would in no way break up the big three. You can make some changes around it, but I think the big three should stay intact.
All right. All right, so when we go to the other side with the Golden State Warriors, I know they're still kicking themselves. It's going to bother them all summer.
Ooh,
like, where did we go wrong? The trophy was right there for the taking. But, again, it goes back to the common denominator, which is LeBron James. He was not to be denied for whatever reason.
Right.
I think a lot of his detractors are still trying to figure it out. He's pretty much silenced most of his critics. I mean, you know, people are, like, really, you know, drawn from the bottom of the barrel to, you know, still find ways to criticize them.
Right,
But as far as the Warriors, where did they go wrong overall? There's rumors that, you know, they'll try to go for another big fish, try to get a Kevin Durant. Good luck with, you know, with them trying to fit them under the cap. Because something's going to have to give. I know Harrison Barnes is making a good amount of money. He's probably going, especially with the series
that he had.
But where do you put the Warriors in perspective? How do they recover from this? And how do you put their season in perspective, being it was historical up until game seven?
Ooh, man, like I'm one of those people that you win 73 games is great, but it doesn't mean anything if you don't win it all. You know, they
kind of puts it in perspective of the 2011 Patriots going 16-0.
I really, if you don't win it, it doesn't validate it. It doesn't put that stamp on it. You know, the Bulls, when they went 72-10, you know, they win the championship. Now that puts the stamp on it, you know. And now, you know, the Warriors are really, and I think if you ask them, you know, they'll say, yeah, you know, it was a great season, but it don't mean nothing now. It doesn't mean anything now. But I think that they have a beyond bitter taste in their mouth. And, you know, but obviously, you know, the West is not the East. You know, it's always hard to just say, you know, they'll be right back. You know, they'll be right back. In the East, you know, you can kind of say right now, the Cavs will be right back. That's how I'm looking at it. In the West, you know, a move here and there, you know, the West is – there's no guarantees,
it could shift,
you know,
right.
in the West. You know, they were down 3-1 to OKC, so, you know, at one point. So, but, you know, I think they'll regroup the bitter taste in their mouth from this. They got complacent, you know, I believe, and like you pointed out, and, you know, and it bit them in the rear end. And I think that now – you know, going into next year, I think they say, you know, our beyond Draymond Green, you know, do we need to toughen up? Is that it? Are we the, you know, the West Coast offense, you know, the finesse, you know what I mean? It's like,
it seems like
the
that kind of got exposed a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the wide open, you know, and like I said, I don't want to call him.
And you know,
runners,
coaches like Barry Popovich, he's taking notes. Billy Donovan's probably taking notes, especially.
Yes.
I know they're heartbroken from being that. They know that taste of being up 3-1 and losing the lead. So, I mean, it might be a bit of a blueprint. Okay, just get to school with these guys and, you know, they're not going to fight back. So that's certainly a legitimate question. And, you know, like you said, when these guys got down, when calls weren't going their way, the shots weren't hitting, you know, you saw it on their body language. It was almost like, you know, they looked at the refs for, like, you know, a lifeline.
Right.
You know, you're caught on, you know, who wants to be a millionaire. You don't know the answer to the question, and you're going for a lifeline that's not there.
Right.
So,
right.
So I
and I know.
Go ahead, Harold. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. And going back to Steph Curry, you know, we talk about, you know, we don't want to question his toughness because he's already been an NBA champ. It seems like that question, that is a legitimate question. Is that what he has to do to improve? And to me, more importantly, he has to improve his defense because this is the first time that I've really seen since he's been in the league, or at least since he became a superstar, that he got exposed defensively. And if you have a point guard or, you know, any type of back presence who can shoot, who can dribble, you know, they can expose him a little bit. Because if you make him work on defense, it seemed pretty evident that he's not the same player.
Right, right.
And also, too, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. You're good. I'll let you finish your point.
Yeah, and it really affected his offense. His shots were short. If they weren't short, they were long. And, you know, that's legs. That's fatigue. And, again, not only did they you know, get rattled mentally, they got rattled physically because, you know, we saw Golden State all season. You know, for 2 years, basically, you know, they put it up. It's going in. You know, you leave them wide open. It's going in. And just to see that, I think I was overly shocked to see that for those last 4.5 minutes to where they just couldn't hit, you know, the broad side of a barn.
Right.
And then I saw the stat after the series. This was mind-boggling to me, to where between Game 6 and Game 7, both fourth quarters, Golden State Warriors combined for 24 points in both fourth quarters of Game 6 and Game 7. Cavs held them to 11 points in Game 6 and 13 points in Game 7. That is
I was not aware of that. Wow. That is.
So something has to give, but that, you know, that is testament to, you know, those close games. And like you said, they never had those. They haven't had the luxury, I should say, or the pressure of dealing with close games back to back. And then, you know, they had everything in their favor. They were 5-point favorites going into Game 7. Nobody's come back from a 3-1 deficit. You know, they had 2 games at home, and I find it ironic that Cavaliers, the 2 games that they won in Oakland, they had their sleeve jerseys on, which everybody calls ugly, but maybe they saw something in that. But real quick, though, before we move on, NBA draft is tomorrow, and I know, Batre, you're a big Boston Celtics fan. You know, here I'm a hometown Sixers fan. First of all, tell me what you think about the number one pick. Who should be the number one pick? Or, more importantly, who you think is the best player in the draft, what the Lakers should do, what Boston should do. Should Boston go ahead and pull that trigger with that trade? Tell us a little bit what you perceive the draft to be tomorrow night.
Well, I think the obvious pick, you know, for number one is Ben Simmons. I mean, the only first I'm going to get into what I like about him. I mean, at 6'9", his ability to handle the ball and pass the ball, you know, the fluidity in which he's able to do that. And, you know, in basketball now, it's a different type game, you know, than, like I said, than what we were used to. And he's that new breed of player. You know, that guy with the size, but then the ability to, you know, to handle the ball. Now, the one thing about him, I'm not confident in his ability to shoot the ball. Now, I've watched him in games, and I'm really not confident in him shooting outside of, like, 8 feet.
That's not a lot of range.
And I watched him, you know, against Oklahoma, in where, you know, a big game, and he took like, you know, 7 shots in the game. And I'm like, wow, you know, was the moment too big for him?
Kind of playing facilitator. Yeah.
You know, was the moment too big for him, or, you know, what, you know, how is this guy wired? We know the skill set, you know, we know that, but you can never tell really what a player is made out of and what he's going to be able to handle. So, you know, all I can do now, you know, is judge off of what I've seen. But like I said, the talent level, you know, is through the roof. The potential, you know, he's a young guy. He's only going to get better and better. You know, his body's going to fill out. So, you know, there's no doubt that he, you know, would be the number one player, you know. And, you know, maybe the jump shot will come. His ability, he's going to have to show some range. But, you know, when you look at what this guy could be, you know, you have to take him at number one. you know, and you know the Lakers.
Let me jump in right here as far as Ben Simmons shooting or lack thereof. Now, I'm trying to think off the top of my head to where we've seen a lot of guys come out of college, whether it be 1 year, you know, 2 years, you know, senior year, come out of college to where, okay, probably their biggest, out of their skill set, their biggest question is their shooting, is their range. Now, going back thinking quickly, we may have to go back to Steph Curry to where, say, no question that, okay, this guy coming out of college, we know he can shoot, but can he do everything else? Or can he, if it wasn't the person's shot, can they create their own shot? So that's usually right. The one question or the other. So we have seen over time where a lot of players who become superstars, they develop a jump shot. They have everything else. They have the athleticism, but they develop it. Even going way back to Michael Jordan, he was not a great, you know, despite all the myths, despite the legend, he was not a great jump shooter coming out of college, maybe a good one.
Right.
You know, we saw him hit that shot in the national championship game, but, you know, his claim to fame wasn't shooting the ball. It was going to the hole. So,
right.
Do you think that comes with time? Do you think that's something that he can develop? Or even if not, he's good enough for talent. He could be that transcending talent to where, you know, people are, you know, they may be comparing on the Magic, a little bit of Magic, a little bit of LeBron, maybe something in between. Do you think his skill set is enough to where he could overcome his shooting, at least in the short range, in the short term, I should say?
I hope so. I think that, you know, he has, you know, I know they say that LeBron James is kind of mentoring him, which I think is a great thing, because I think if he has LeBron kind of, not saying looking over his shoulder, but if he has LeBron, I think that'll give him more incentive to be the best he can be, you know, to give him that extra little push that, you know, that kind of, you know, I don't want to let LeBron down. You know, I want to show my work.
Yeah, and also kind of telling him what it takes, showing him what it takes to make it at the next level too.
Right. And like I said, he's going to be good. Like I said, he's a young guy, you know, one year of college, and, you know, the sky's the limit for this guy. But like I said, I think he has some good people around him. And the one thing that I'm worried about, I just hope that he doesn't, because a lot of times when a star-type player goes to a team that's struggling or rebuilding, and the losing affects them, it affects their growth. So I'm just hoping that that doesn't happen with the Sixers, because the Sixers, you know, with Embiid, I hear that he's cleared the play, but, you know, I've heard that seven times now. So, you know, a lot of times a player can get lost in losing, and I hope that doesn't happen, you know, with Ben Simmons. So, you know, it's a wait and see, Jay. It's like I said, the sky's the limit for this kid, but, you know, we'll see.
All right. Well, real quick, Lakers, you know, Brandon Ingram is a done deal. And then the wild card in this draft is your Boston Celtics. Are they going to stay put at three? It seems like they're looking to pull the trigger. Okay, two-part question. Should they pull the trigger? And then also, do you think they will pull the trigger?
Well, so far I hear that they've been turned down. I don't know what the what the offer.
Yeah, people
was.
Are afraid to deal with Danny Ainge, probably, yeah.
So, if it were me, I would deal. I would deal. Deal to three.
Okay, well, who are you looking for?
Oh, man.
You want to go after one of the Sixers bigs, or who's your big fish, in your opinion, to make yourself feel better?
Well, in watching the Celtics play, the one thing I noticed that they're a great defensive team. They hustle. They got a bunch of guys that can play. Nobody great.
Yeah, great job by Brad Stevens, by the way, making a transition from college to the NBA. Great job, yeah.
you know, Isaiah's the best player, but he's a little guy. They didn't have a go-to guy. And in the East, you're one go-to guy away from making the conference finals, you know.
Yeah,
so
you can say that with just about all the teams other than the Cavs.
Yeah. So I'm looking for them to, you know, could they possibly get Durant come? You know, I don't know, Jay, but I would take Okafor. I'd put together something, try to get Okafor. Jay, I'm desperate right now as a Celtics fan. I'm beyond
you. You desperate for that guy to put you over the
hump. I'm desperate for that guy. Just
to at least try to compete with Cleveland.
Yes. Just give us that guy, because you're not going to win in this league if you don't have that guy. And that's what we're lacking. So, you know, I hope we keep shopping it. You know, we got 100 picks, seem like, in this draft, you know, so we're loaded. You know, we got a lot to offer. So, you know, just start rounding them up, Ainge. Start putting the picks together and see what we can
put them all in a bag and ship them away, see what you can get. Look at that big fish. Throw out the little fish so you can get the big one, so you get that big marlin. All right, last thing. Big trade today. Derrick Rose goes to the Knicks for a couple guys, and then they got the three-team deal, Jeff Teague.
Right.
I forget all the details, but your thoughts on that trade immediately. And I'll always clown Knicks fans. Because, look, if you're saying that, you know, my Sixers aren't any good, it's been since 83, it's been since 73 for them. So they have no they have no leverage, you know, on my Sixers, I should say. But your thoughts on Derrick Rose? Would it be good for the Knicks? Is it just a stopgap? And what do you think the Bulls are doing? And then talk about the Jeff Teague trade quickly.
Oh, man. Derrick Rose, that's pretty much just a sad story. You know, if this trade was, I'm trying to think how many years ago, this would have been like, oh my God, you know. But I really don't think, in terms of the Knicks, I don't look at D. Rose anymore as the D. Rose that we are accustomed to.
As, you know, a superstar, right?
Yes. You know, the injuries, it's taken its toll. And he's one of those players, you know, he's been a bad luck player. You can't count on him going the whole way.
That question, what could have been. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I looked at the trade as kind of like, okay, you know, we'll have to wait and see. It's not one of those trades where you can look
at it as. I kind of look at it as it seems to me like the Bulls are dumping salary. I think Jimmy Butler is all but gone. It's just a matter of where he'll end up. You know, they're not going to re-sign Joakim Noah because he's an unrestricted free agent. It seems to me that either the Bulls are they're going to either tank or they're just clearing salary to try to get a big fish or maybe try to take a run at a Durant or someone of that nature too.
Right.
Yeah, so, and then the Jeff T trade, there was talk that Jeff T would come here with the Sixers, but I didn't necessarily, you know, want that trade because my opinion about my Sixers, I don't want them to rush into building. I want to see what Ben Simmons can do. I want them to build around the Ben Simmons, build around Okafor if he stays here, see what they have. And I'm just hoping this is my worry. Carol, you can run with this, as I tell you. You know, the Colangelos, they're here in town. I don't fully trust these guys because I my worry is that they'll try to be too cute in the draft.
Right.
I know they'll take Ben Simmons, but as far as, I don't know, parting with Okafor, parting with Noel, I'm surrendering to the fact that one of these guys are going to be moved probably tomorrow night. But, again, I just don't want them to get cute about it.
Right.
And just try to get a quick fix and say, okay, I'm going to put the stamp on this team because Sam Hinkie put this team so far in the tank.
Right, right. Yeah, but like I said, I mean, my guys, you know, I hope they have inspiration. And I know, you know, you don't want to part with those guys, but you feel as though, you know, one of them are going to go. And, you know, if we could get Okafor, if we could, we'll take, we just need that upgrade. And then switching over real quick to Jeff Teague and going back to how the East is, you know, not saying he's, you know, go-to guy, but most teams may feel as though we're one player away from being in the conference championship, you know.
Right,
so
right.
Giving,
seem like
you
the
know,
narrative.
Yeah, exactly. So in the East, you know, you make whatever adjustment, you know, whatever player you may think may just need to be that fit, and you could take off in the East, you know. So, you know, I like it for the Pacers, you know. I really do.
All right. Well, Harold, thanks a lot, man, for hanging out on me, on hanging out with me on this episode of the Pod. Great knowledge. I knew you would bring it. And look, your assessment of LeBron James now, he's won you over. It's like, you know, maybe he flipped the switch for you. I don't know. But, you know, it's great to see. And it's just great to see anybody for, you know, just seeing LeBron take that next step, take the bull by
right.
the horns. Win this championship, will this championship for not only for Cleveland, but for himself as
right.
well. And we both see it. And quite frankly, you got to be a fool if you don't see it by now. So
exactly.
at this point, it doesn't
exactly.
matter who you compare him to. He's in that conversation now.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. All righty, man. Thanks a lot again for hanging out. Of course, you're
always
welcome here on the Pod. Great, always great talking to you. All the best to you and your family, man. Thanks.
All right. Take care, brother. All right.
All right. Anytime. All righty.
Take care. All right.
All right. So we're just about done here on the Pod. Just some final thoughts. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just take a short pause, and then we're going to come back and wrap up the show.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are four times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day, and the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor or mentor, give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We're back here on the Pod Show. My name is OJ Spivey. We just had some great basketball talk, just like we were in a barbershop, just like we were sitting on a corner, sitting on a porch talking basketball with my old friend Harold. Thanks for coming on the show. Some great commentary. He gave it up for LeBron James, and that's my sentiment today. Give it up for him. He brought it home. Again, you saw it. You heard it. You've seen the athleticism, you've seen the will, you've seen the leadership, and no matter what, you know, Michael Jordan has been the litmus test. I don't know, just because of the six rings, I don't know, just because of the era. It's not all about rings, folks. I mean, for this generation, it seems to be. Because if it was all about rings, we'd be talking about Bill Russell, the best player. But it's about time that we put LeBron James in his proper perspective because, look, he did it. He did it in dramatic fashion. He did something that was never, ever done before. Again, so what? That Jordan never went to a seventh game. It takes a lot to be in a seventh game. Magic Johnson's been in seven games. Larry Bird has been in seven games. Will Chamberlain has been in seven games. Bill Russell himself. Dr. J. There's been a whole lot of great players here have gone in seven games, and that's not to diminish anything that they've done. Magic Johnson has lost NBA Finals. So has Larry Bird. So has Doc. So has Will. Again, we're going to talk rings. It starts and ends with Bill Russell. He has 11. Nobody's ever going to surpass that. Jordan didn't. I mean, you talk about you put Kareem in that conversation too. Kareem has just as many rings as Michael Jordan does. Okay, and that's another testament to LeBron James because LeBron joins Kareem as the only players to win MVPs, NBA Finals MVPs with two different teams. So. Last thing here, put LeBron James' proper perspective, however you want to do it. You got to put him in the conversation. Also, too, Sixers, take Ben Simmons. I know they are. They said they were going to be. Just hopefully they won't be too cute. And, again, to all those people saying that they shouldn't take Ben Simmons, this is why you tank. In fact, I'm going to say it. LeBron James, what we saw with LeBron James the other day, this is why you go after Ben Simmons, because if he could be half as good as LeBron James, it was a great pick. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks again for everybody for listening to the pod show. Again, you can catch us on Twitter at the pod show. You can also catch me at OJ Philly on Twitter as well. Listen to the podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher as well. We'll talk to you next time. And always remember, life is short. Play to win. God bless.